Hey, what's up? This is John Wysocki from Lydia's Castle, and you're listening to Music City Metal.
Hey, this is Tom Hazard, and you are listening to Music City Metal.
That's me.
Welcome back, Mary Fish.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Music City Metal, boy, it's been a long time, 6 months since Mary and I have gotten into the fishbowl. And man, it's going to be really special because we got a cool guest unexpectedly. And welcome.
Welcome. But back. The fishbowl's frozen right now.
Yes,
the pond has frozen over.
Right. 3 inches of snow.
Yeah, so we're.
Town's going to melt.
I couldn't get to the fishbowl. I tried getting to the fishbowl, and Mother Nature said, fuck off. I got 8 miles from the fishbowl, and I had to cut it. I'm like, nope, I'm going home.
And that's welcome to Tennessee, man. Crazy weather. This is odd. This happens twice a year.
But this is not the Tennessee I know, man. Tennessee has forsaken me. Like, dude, last week I was in Wisconsin, where I live. And I was like, and I saw this huge blizzard coming. I'm like, fuck this. All next week it's supposed to snow. I'm like, fuck this. I'm going to Tennessee. And then I come here and it's this shit. But who's that? Who signed off on this? Like, I didn't approve this. I see your Buffalo Bills hat over there, though.
Yes.
See, it's kind of it's kind of like being in the fishbowl. I can see you. It's like you guys really are in a fishbowl because I can sit and watch you. I'm tapping on the glass right now. I'm giving you some Tetra flakes.
Good, because I'm starving. Larry, tell everyone who's with us today.
We have Tom Hazard from THC Records. The list from the things that you've done is quite extensive. You have quite a background. The founder of Street Teams. The people you
work
with.
That's what they tell me.
Yeah. This year.
I did a lot of Street Team stuff. I managed Chimera and Switched and Depth Swat and Erase the Gray and
Motorhead.
Helped them get signed. I helped Papa Roach get signed. I helped a bunch of bands. I worked with Stained early on and Cold and Limp Bizkit and Korn and Deftones. And I don't know. I've done a few things.
Yeah, well, welcome, man, and thanks for hanging out with Larry and Mary in the virtual fishbowl.
Today it's virtual.
Yeah, it's a virtual fish tapping on the glass. I'm sitting here watching you guys swim in and out of your little SpongeBob thing.
Bikini Bottom.
Yeah, I get called Larry the Lobster once in a while. It happens.
I'm on my desk at home. It's funny, on my desk at home, I actually have this little Jaws thing that I bought at Walmart, but it's actually for an aquarium, but it's like a little Jaws head and it's super dope. I saw it at Walmart. I'm like, I have to buy this. I don't have an aquarium, but I'm not going to tell anyone. And I never did until right now.
That's our exclusive.
That's it. There's
we got
exclusive.
It. You heard it
the scoop
first.
Right here.
The keywords right.
You're getting the scoop here on the Larry and Mary, Harry Carey, scary show.
Fish. Well, man, yeah. You know, this year when when we were getting ready for Fish Fest, when Tanya came in, and this is Lydia's Castle, this is how we've met. She told me, she's like, yeah.
What is this Lydia's Castle that you speak of?
Yeah, tell me about it. Tell me your side. Well, Tanya from Lydia's, she goes, yeah, Tom Hazard's coming by tonight to check out the show, and I went, wait, what? So it was an honor to have you at our festival this year. Thank you, and we'll take that constructive criticism, but I guess the cat's kind of out of the bag. We're just talking right now about Fish Fest this year.
There's no cats out of any bag unless you let them out of the bag.
Yeah, you're about to let the cat out of
the
bag. Firmly in the fucking bag. But yes, we are talking about perhaps trying to bring some of my bands in for Fish Fest this year. So if you know who my bands are, you can probably figure it out.
Yeah, let's
if you
make
don't,
them do
well,
research.
You're shit out of luck.
Let them let the listeners go do research. We will say Lydia's Castle because that is one of your bands now, because not the time in between Fish Fest for an and now you get you have signed them and gotten them out on TV.
I manage them, and I say, oh, look, me and John, so good I was Mayor Lydia's Castle. It's John Wysocki from Stained, who I'm at his house right now. This is actually the first special episode of Live from John Wysocki's house. yeah, me and John go back 30 years. I mean, I worked on the first Stained record, and literally, I was at the first Stained shows they played outside of, like, Massachusetts, where they're from, like their first shows in California. And I worked with them really early on, and on the first two records, Dysfunction and Break the Cycle. So, you know, yeah, last year when I heard John was playing, they were working with a cat named John Joyce, who reached out to me and said, hey, this band Lydia's Castle and John Wysocki. I'm like, oh, I know John. And then me and John kind of reconnected, and it was awesome because we haven't talked in probably 15, 20 fucking years that we, you know, reconnected. And yeah, it's cool, man. We started kind of talking and talking about the band. And yeah, I came out for Fish Fest and saw them and hung out. And it's funny because I never stay at anybody's houses, man. When I travel, like, I make people put me up in hotels. I'm super anal about it. And, you know, John, originally they put me at a hotel and I couldn't check in. He's like, just come to my house. So I did. He's like, dude, I have a guest bathroom. Just stay here. And I'm like, fine. So I relented and stayed at John's house, and we hung out all week, and, you know, I went and saw the band, and, yeah, and we had a really cool hang, we had a really cool week, and then I set them up with Matt LaPlante, who I work with, who mixed the new Taproot record for me, and all my stuff I did with Ellison, you know, Matt recorded all my vocals, and we do a lot of stuff together, so now he's doing the new Lydia's Castle stuff, and yeah, so I signed them to my label, THC. We're putting out some stuff. I'm managing them, you know. So, but it's been a cool little, you know, me and Tanya just went and had lunch today. So, I mean, again, they've become good friends, and me and John really reconnected, which has been super cool. And, you know, but yeah, Fish Fest, it all started at Fish Fest, baby.
Wow.
I love that. There's a lot of stories where people go, we met at Fish Fest. That just makes me feel like all the sleepless nights were worth it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Right. No, that's cool.
I wish it was a better story. I wish it was like, you know, a girl or something. But, I mean, John Wysocki. I mean, he's kind of like a bromance, but that doesn't really count, does it?
No, that doesn't count.
He is we'll a work on
it. It does a little bit.
Well, we've gotten to know him, well, not just through Lydia's Castle, but he's also friends with Rob Barrett, who we've developed a little bit the last few years since he did Fish Fest first. He's the first year and now. So we kind of got to know. We spent the last two New Year's Eves with John and Shannon, and Mary and Shannon hit it off. So we, and then, you know, like, oh yeah, I'm in Lydia's Castle. It was kind of like a backwards thing, but that was our introduction to John, and they're a blast to be around. Really just starting to get to know him a little bit better, friendship wise now, you know, not just through the band. So great guy, man. Very, both of them.
The only person who I will stay at his house, which I'm at his house right now. I've been here all week. And it wasn't even like I had a like really good reason to come down here. We were just like talking a couple weeks ago before Christmas. I'm like, dude, just come down here. Just drive down here. Just come down here. I'll fly you, whatever. And then I was like, all right. And then it was like his kid was coming. And he's like, all right, well, as soon as your kid leaves, I'll come down. And then his kid left. And so it wasn't even like I had this like real business need to be there. It's just like, I'm going to go hang out with John. And here we are.
Yeah, nice. So
part of it was, I mean, again, we were going to talk about Fish Fest, and there's certain things to do, and they were actually doing some recording with Matt. So, I mean, there was reasons I could use to justify it, but, you know, really, I just wanted to come hang out with John and raid his garage and steal all his old Stained stuff, which I did.
When we helped him move for a day, get a couple of loads, and he was going through and showing me his logs, tour logs with Stained in the 90s. He saved a lot of that stuff. And that was pretty cool. Got to see a busy man.
Yeah, those have all been sitting on it. Yeah, those are sitting on an end table in the living room the whole time I've been here. So I kind of whipped through them a little bit too. They're fun. It's like a time capsule.
That's pretty cool, though. What do you think, what would you say, like, is the something that sticks out in your mind of something that's changed over those last 30 years from kind of where you started, you know, I don't want to say together, but, like, from then till now as far as...
I mean, it was a real business, and now it's not. Everything was awesome, and now it sucks. I mean, I could go on and on. I mean, a lot of profound changes have happened in the last 30 years, you know, but I mean, really, I don't know. I mean, again, there was, yeah, it was just a real business then, you know, it was like, you know, it was fun. It was, you know, there were millions and billions of dollars just flying around at goofy little rock bands. And, you know, it was a different time. Rock bands got the attention and budgets that fucking Taylor Swift and country artists do now. You know what I mean? It was just a different time, man, when rock and roll mattered to the mainstream establishment and you could actually do things and actually make money. And, you know, I mean, you can still do things, but it's just on a microcosm, independent, fractional level compared to what it was, you know, back then. Back then, labels were, you know, going around $1 million record deal for, you know. I mean, John, we're just talking about the last time. You found this. Where is it? I guess it doesn't matter. I don't need to show you because nobody will be able to see it anyway. Where is that? God, this is really cool. You'll like to see it, though. Right. And then we can make everybody at home be jealous because they can't see it. Let's see. Hang on. Here it is. So we found this at the garage last night. This is the treatment written by Fred Durst for the home video. This is literally like the treatment, the map to the location. Like this is, and it's like 50 pages. It's basically like a production schedule for a movie. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It was for the video.
We were talking about it last night. Like when I managed Swished, I think their first video, the budget was like $250,000. This video, I think he said it was like $800,000. I mean, literally like the budget of a small independent movie, you know? I mean, it's just, again, that's a perfect example of the difference then. Like literally video budgets were and this is home. They weren't a big band yet. You know what I mean? This is before Outside. This is Dysfunction. This is their first record. And they made an almost $1 million video for the second single. And the first video, Mud Shovel, was probably $250,000 at least. I was actually at the shoot for the Mud Shovel video. It was ridiculous. It was crazy. They erected this huge,
supposed to hit the
massive, like, gear stage in the middle of the fucking desert. And the band played on it. And even that, their first video was ridiculous. This was like their second video, and I think the budget was $800,000. Like, I mean, if that doesn't, you know, show you the difference between then and now, man. Yeah. Literally, three locations. Oh, shit. Hang on. Uh-oh. I have to edit that out. But, like, literally, there's three different locations, and like, there's literally, in the back, there's a listing for the staff, right? And it's literally 10 pages of phone numbers, like, director, hey, Fred Durst's phone number is in here. Director, producer, director, photographer, first AD, production manager, production coordinator, assistant coordinator, location manager, location scout, first AC, second AC. And that's just the first fucking page. There's literally 10 pages like that of staff, like a staff directory for just that fucking video.
Wow, that's insane. So how is that now? Are you saying the budgets are bigger? I didn't catch it, that they're more expensive now. And what are the returns?
There aren't any budgets now. There's no budgets for anything. There's no money for anything now. Like, it's all independent. Like, The last Tapper video we literally made for $2,000. You know what I mean? It was cool, but it's not like this. It was like a fucking movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Where it's
it was great. A cool video, and we lucked out and had some people help us out. And, you know, I mean, legitimately spent a few $1,000s on it. You know what I mean? And that's sort of how it is now. I mean, it's real independent. Yeah, I mean, I showed you the video the other day. We watched it.
Yeah, that's it. Right.
The favorite film video.
And I think that kind of thing is cool too, because it's a lot of the local bands that are independent that we have tried and just support them, get them out of town, put them on our show, put them on Fish Fest, take them to Florida. Know that the atmosphere or just the whole thing is different. They're not gonna like, hey, here's a record deal, go get ready to tour record, and you know, here's a bunch of money. It's not like that at all anymore. Yeah. So what are your plans with the way you're gonna handle like Lydia's Castle, an indie band?
How's the methodology changed? Yeah, is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, how has it changed? What do you do different?
Thank you, Mary.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, honestly, it's the label artist dynamic is completely different now. I mean, even if you signed to a more traditional label, you know, they give you like, you know, a Nuclear Blast or a Century Media. It's like, here's $5,000 to go make a record. Here's $1,000 to go make a video. You know, and again, a lot of my records, a lot of my deals are sort of licensing deals where the bands, I mean, look, it used to cost $1 million to record a record. Now a band can do it at home in their basement on Pro Tools. So, I mean, you don't really need huge budgets and huge money. It's like, for me, it's kind of more, you know, I kind of more help with marketing and promotion and publicity. And obviously prior to this, I ran another label called EMP Label Group for 6 years, and before that I had another label called Corporate Punishment Records for 10 years, and my current label THC Music I've had for over a decade. It actually precluded EMP. I had THC and then hooked up with that guy, and we, you know, he had the idea for EMP and I took it and took care of the actual execution of starting the label and getting the distribution deals and signing the bands. I mean, obviously he had Dalskin, who were the first band we signed, and that's really the only band he brought in. I signed everything and got all of the deals and brought in the money for everything. And, and there was certain artists where he definitely helped us sign them, like Mark Slaughter and things where I knew them, and, you know, him being involved, obviously, and the perception that it was his label certainly didn't hurt with some of these bigger artists and the confidence. But the reality is, I ran it. I took my THC label, my template that I already had for that, slapped his name on it, and just went out and signed a bunch of bands and did it. Again, even that same kind of thing. It was licensing. Bands would bring us their finished records. We would put them out, do some marketing, do some distribution, do some promotion, and obviously certain things, you know, like the Mark Slaughter record and the Doyle record, and there's certain things that were bigger than other things and were a bigger priority and got a little more money behind them. And, you know, certain things are a little smaller and done a little more independently. But, I mean, again, the label artist dynamic is really different now. I mean, it's a little more subdued. With me, again, it's more like a licensing thing where, you know, they'll basically bring me a finished record. I'll take, you know, like the Taproot record. Steve had that record basically recorded, but I took it to Matt and got it remixed and reworked and really finalized. You know, and I did, you know, all the branding, and I did the layout, and I did all the, you know, with them, I managed them as well. And I designed all their merchandise. And so again, it's like I sort of more, you know, kind of over the years defined and refined what I do. And it's always, I've always worn a lot of hats, man. I've always done kind of production and development and marketing and, like you said, street marketing and those sorts of things. And then as it kind of progressed more to the internet, I sort of aligned myself more there and really immersed myself in internet marketing. But again, the traditional marketing, I'm fluent in kind of the You know, I just feel like that's a cool thing about me is I understand the way it was done before, the major label way, when there was tons of money and tons of exposure and different things, but I also understood the more street level, underground way to do things. And even with the EMP and even with THC, it's always kind of met right in the middle. You know, I put up a Taproot record and it was huge. I mean, I got a lot of love and a lot of respect and a lot of response. And it really, I mean, they're a big band and they're a great band. And it doesn't hurt that at one point, some major labels spent millions and millions and millions of dollars promoting them and making videos and doing stuff. And that's a lot of what's happening now is a lot of these kind of legacy artists that, you know, were sort of put through the major label machine. Now they have all that cachet behind them because they were made kind of household names by major labels spending all that money in the 2000s or the 90s or the 80s or whenever it was. And now they can kind of use that as capital for themselves to build off of, and why a label like myself can kind of do what I do, you know, because, you know, it's really, as you know, it's really expensive and really challenging to build an independent, to build an artist from scratch. It's just next to impossible. It's always been, but it's harder now than it's ever been. You know, there's a lot of avenues that are closed. Magazines aren't really a thing anymore, and MTV is not really a thing anymore, and radio's to a certain degree not a thing anymore, and all the things that really, you know, everything used to come through the same input channel. You know, it was, there was these mass communication channels that you could utilize, but they cost a lot of money, but you could utilize them to get your musical message out en masse. And now it's more one-on-one experience. It's trying to find fans and connect with them and reconnect with them on a one-on-one basis, which is a lot more challenging, you know what I mean? So, but all those mass communication channels, they really don't, to a certain extent, don't exist anymore, or they're a lot more ineffectual than they were at various other points in history, you know? So yeah, again, it's a little more of a one-on-one battle going out and trying to find fans basically one at a time, 10 at a time, 20 at a time, as opposed to, all right, we're going to put this video on MTV and 10 million people are going to see it. And they're going to be on tour with, and I'm going to go buy Ozzy tomorrow.
Yeah, just like what I would do, watch the video, watch my Hard 30 or whatever metal show is on.
Yeah, me too. Hard 30. And fingers ball. And, in our day, I thought you're an old man now, but you basically got your bands from the same four or five fucking magazines, the same couple radio stations, right. MTV.
Right. So then go out and buy the CD or go buy the album, and they had to do it even if you only wanted one song off that. So does that shift now for a band to make money? It's pretty much shows and merch.
Yeah, it's pretty, shows and merchandise, merch. Man. I mean, you're traveling t-shirt salesman. That's all it is, you know? Your streams of revenue are merchandise and touring, basically. You know, sure, pretty much it, you know?
Yep, that's the revenue.
And obviously the music side of it. I mean, physical music formats, people buy more as memorabilia now. You know, they go to a show, they buy a CD because they want to get it signed by the band. You know, they're not going to a record store and buying a CD to listen to it. They're going on Spotify the day it comes out and listening to it, or Apple Music. And yeah, I mean, the dynamics have shifted a whole lot, as you know.
Well, hence, that kind of goes into the topic of ticket prices then, because it was one thing Mary and I were discussing. We have discussed already, and so you kind of laid the groundwork for a whole different dynamic of why ticket prices are more expensive. I have said this in the past. It was like, okay, if you're not going to buy my music, if you want to see me play live, fuck you, you're going to pay me. You're not buying my music anymore. So that's that.
Yeah, and it's true. And that's literally one of the last, you know, last bastions of revenue for an artist is the ticket price. Look, and in fairness, nobody I work with, you know, currently, and it's funny because when I work with way bigger bands at arena level, or bigger levels, the ticket prices weren't like they are now. Even then they were 30, 40 bucks. You know, I remember going to arena shows and seeing Motley Crue and Metallica and Kiss, and it was $20 fucking.
Yeah,
I mean, granted, the economy has changed, but still, even if you adjusted it for current dollars, it would probably be like 50. You know what I mean? It still would be what, you know, I mean, these 405. But certain artists, I mean, again, like, I got my kid tickets to Glassjaw. I was actually going to fly out and take them to see Glassjaw for Christmas, but I couldn't make it out, so they went and took a friend. But I mean, the tickets were $50 or something. You know, it wasn't bad at all. I mean, at the independent levels, I think tickets are still pretty reasonable. I mean, all the Tapper shows, our ticket price is never over $25, $30. Ever. None of these shows, not one of these shows has been over $25, $30. This whole reunion tour we've done. And to me, I want to keep the ticket price as fair as possible. And I mean, there's a little leeway for the venue to, and it really depends how much you're getting paid, what the venue needs to make, what their expenses are. But generally, the ticket price of the Tapper shows were $25 to $35, and nothing, absolutely nothing over that. There was a couple of big festivals we did where it was a little higher ticket price, but even then it was maybe 60 for like 8 bands or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so
I
think right. No, for 8 bands, right. Yeah.
I mean, I think there's certain bands who charge astronomical fucking prices because they can, and I kind of think it's bullshit. I mean, even artists like Bruce Springsteen, real mainstream big artists, and to be honest, I couldn't tell you the last time I bought a ticket to go to a concert. If I'm at a concert, it's because I'm friends with them. I'm there for a reason. It's business or I'm working, you know?
Exactly. So
it's like, I couldn't tell you how much a Taylor Swift ticket is or, you know, even a Kiss ticket now or, you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't fucking tell you because I don't know. But I know in the circles I move in, we all still try to make as much money as we can, but still, you know, I do know this. Taproot is making 4 or 5 times the money we made the last time the band toured 10 plus years ago, but we've kept the ticket price roughly the same. To me, that's a win, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You.
I just want to know if you need an intern.
Sure. I always need interns. I need somebody to run my life. If you want to run my life,
I can
sign
manage your calendar. Sure. I can tell you where to be and when.
She does like about 50% of mine.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Hey, yeah,
no, I feel like you got your hand full with that guy. I don't know if you can handle it.
I don't know. Two of you? Jeez. My hair's already gray, so we've got that covered.
Yeah. So's mine, honey. So's mine. But
I just.
Hey, hard.
Go ahead, honey.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, some of the things that you named off, obviously you've built this career over pretty much your lifetime, but some of those things I light up at because, and not, I am not a fangirl. You could say, hey, so-and-so's in the room, and I'll be like, okay, I don't know, who is that? The names of the people and all of that never really stuck with me when it came to like a band that I like, but some of the other things that you're talking about, the marketing and just the, I don't know, that feeling of building something, building a following, building a network of people, to me, just, I know it's not glamorous and I know you've worked your ass off to get where you are, so I'm not discounting any of that, but to me, I'm like, do you need somebody to tag along? Because I would love to do that.
Yeah, look, and it is, I mean, to a certain extent, it's like kind of an addiction, you know what I mean? It's an adrenaline rush of like taking this thing that's here and seeing what you can do to build it up. And again, it's been amazing. I was saying to John the other day, kind of joking around, like, you know, I kind of feel like Forrest Gump sometimes, where I've just been at these real crossroads points in music history and been there to just witness these mind-blowing fucking things firsthand that are like, you know, and be a part of these really cool things. I mean, look, and I think part of it's talent, for lack of a better word. Part of it's opportunity. Part of it's just, you know, knowing, you know, having, I think, you know, I've always, you know, when I was a kid, man, you know, everybody's a kid, they're looking at their records and looking at the pictures of the bands. And I did that too, but dude, me, I was like looking to see, okay, who's the A&R guy on this record? You know, and what 12-year-old kid even knows what a fucking A&R guy is? But I was, you know, and there's guys like Tom Zutaut and you know, some of these massive producers, you know, like Max Norman and really just genius A&R guys like Tom Zutaut, who I've become friends with over the years, and really gotten to just sit at the feet of fucking giants. And, you know, I mean, Zoot signed Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses, Tesla. He had a hand in signing Metallica. I go to every band I've ever, like, Tom Zutaut fucking signed, you know? And I've had to work with Mike Klink, who produced Appetite for Destruction, and Max Norman, who produced Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman. And just, again, I've really gotten to be, you know, I've just kind of forced Gump my way through all these really crazy fucking things. And, you know, and I've gotten to work with, you know, so many of the bands I idolized and listened to and you know, and not even just bands. I've gotten to work with people, you know, in the business that, you know, really were the people that made me want to do this in the first place, which is, you know, such a fucking blessing. You know what I mean? It really, 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 you know, to be able to just, you know, I was some fucking poor welfare kid, some poor fat welfare kid from Wisconsin. You know what I mean? I had no right doing any of the shit I did, and everybody said I couldn't, and they were probably right, but I fucking did it anyway.
Figure
you know?
It out. Yeah.
That's
if you
right.
don't know how, figure it out.
I was what are you going to do?
Yeah,
hell was, yeah.
That's right. Tom Hazard in the virtual fishbowl telling us about an amazing life and career. And this coming year, 2024, you're taking Taproot's going out, right? And Lydia's Castle.
Yeah, kind of. Taproot's kind of doing this year. We did more shows last year. You know, it's funny. Originally, they weren't even doing any fucking shows. The whole thing happened by accident. Like, I also run a skateboard company with my partner, John Horn, who's the owner. He has an amazing company called Volatile Skateboards and does a lot of really cool licensed band decks and really cool shit. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I kind of took a hiatus from the music business. I'm like, fuck this. I'm going to do something else. So I started working with him on the skateboard stuff, which was music adjacent. And it was fun and it was cool.
Some of those decks are neat. Look, you shared a lot of them flipping through them.
Yeah.
That's cool. It's still music related, but yeah, taking a break.
Yeah, it is. It's so cool. So I got to still utilize my connections, and I still do. But so basically, I kept bugging him. Like, dude, I want to work with you. And then just finally it connected. We did it. And so about a year and a half ago, I officially jumped on and kind of became the A&R guy. I mean, fully worked my way into just being like the number two guy at the company, especially just me and John, right? So, you know, and I brought in this year, I brought in Cavalera, you know, I have a great relationship with Max and Gloria. So we did Cavalera. We did decks for the new versions of Morbid Visions and Bestial Devastation they put out. We just did a Soulfly deck and, you know, we just did Hailstorm and I brought in Ministry. We just did some Ministry decks.
Nice.
And, you know, we do Helmet. I brought in Fear Factory earlier in the year, Guar. You know, we've really taken that to the next level together too, which is amazing. You know what I mean? But how that relates. So the whole Taproot thing was a complete fucking accident. Me and Phil have been friends for years and years and years and years and years. The bass player was kind of a business guy in the band. And one day I said, dude, you want to do some Taproot skateboards? That'd be awesome, right? And they just announced they were doing a one-off show, kind of getting back together for one show at Blue Ridge Rock Fest, which, funny enough, didn't even happen. The show got canceled when we got there. But and what a debacle that became. But I digress. So, you know, like, yeah, let me talk to Steve and see if we can do it. I mocked up some skateboards, and they loved them, so we did it. And I said, dude, we also have Volatile merch. So I'm like, why don't we do a merch store? When was the last time you guys had any merch? He's like, 10 years ago? Let's do a fucking merch store. So we did a separate merch store. And then they have this B-sides collection that they had put out on their own, just like a 6-disc box set of all these demos that Steve had basically recorded, you know, in his mom's fucking basement. But basically every song they'd ever recorded, they had a demo version of it. and they put it out on this box set. So I was like, dude, let me put that out. Let me distribute it. Let me really put that out. And so we started talking about that, and he goes, you know, Steve has a whole studio record he's been working on for 10 years that he's trying to put out. I'm like, are you fucking kidding? So I talked to Steve, and we said, I'm like, please, let me do this. Let me put this out. Let me work with you on it. And you know, finally he came around and said, yeah. So we decided to partner up on what became Scissor. And through that, I was like, dude, let's just do like one show. I was like, let's do a CD release show for the album at the Machine Shop, which is kind of like their home venue. So we did that, put it on sale. It sold out in 20 fucking minutes. So we added a second show, and that sold out in 30 minutes. And then we're like, well, this is really great. Let's add a couple more. And I'm like, just give me a weekend. Because a couple of the guys have day jobs, and they make really good money, and they have careers. Not jobs, but they have careers. So, and Jared, the original drummer, is one of them. And he came back into the band as well. He'd been gone. He left after, I think, after Blue Sky Research or after A Long Road Home. Somewhere in that period, Jared left and just left the band for over a decade and started a family and got a real career. And so, you know, so Jared came back and originally he came back for the one couple shows. And then I'm like, look, let's just do a couple of shows. Give me a couple of weekends, man. You guys work. Give me a weekend. So he's like, all right, I'll give you 6 dates. So they gave me 6 weekend dates. I booked 6 shows. And then there was still tons of offers. So it turned into, you know, that one show turned into, I think, 24. You know, we basically did every weekend through the rest of the year, you know, and it was great. So, but now, holy shit, that was a really long answer. So yeah, Taproot's going out this year, aren't they? But yeah, so to bring back around to your question that everybody probably forgot what it was at this point, this year we're kind of focusing more on festivals. Like we're doing Sonic Temple, we're doing Sick New World, we're doing Welcome to Rockville, some of the Danny Wimmer festivals. And we're kind of booking weekend runs and certain things around that. We're not doing as many weekend runs as we did last year. We're going to do a handful. But the other thing is Jared's got a lot of stuff he's got going on this year. So he already has said he's going to sit out a handful. And John Wysocki is actually going to fill in on a handful of dates.
Yeah, he mentioned that, a couple of them. He's said, I need a drum tech. That was going to be a lot. But you are, and again, Lydia's Castle is going to be going on pretty much all the dates with Taproot.
No, I mean whatever I can squeeze them on. They're gonna. They did a bunch of them last year.
Fit together.
They'll do a handful of them. I mean, I'm not going to have them. These are going to be a lot more random fly-ins in different places where it's not going to make as much sense for them to like, oh, fly out to play, you know, one show 8,000 miles away. You know, so again, they'll be on a handful of them. They'll probably do a couple of the shows with Simon Says. They'll probably, you know, I work with Eve to Adam as well, and we're talking about doing a handful of shows together. So, yeah, again, the path will diverge a little bit, but I'm sure they'll end up on a couple of them. And, but, you know, again, I'm not really sure what the year is going to hold for Lydia's Castle yet or what opportunities are going to present themselves, but they always do, man. You know, the cream tends to rise, you know, when you got a good team around you, and that's where we are. So, yeah, I mean, no, they'll be on a handful of them, I'm sure. But, you know, they're going to probably do some of the shows with Simon Says and some of my other bands, and hopefully some other opportunities for other bands that are not mine will also present themselves, you know, so we'll see.
So when you say the cream, you know, rises to the top there, having a good team around you and such, when you're looking for that next up and coming, or when you were looking at Lydia's Castle, you know, short of John and whatever friendship might have been there, just looking at them for what it is, what are the things you look for in a band?
To be totally honest, I love the band. Tanya's great. Cody's great. But if John wasn't in the band, I probably wouldn't have been interested, to be totally blunt. You know what? John, again, like I said before, breaking a baby band, a new band, a developing band is the hardest, most costly, expensive fucking thing in the world. Unless you have some kind of an angle, like your drummer was in a band that sold 25 million records. You know what I mean? Like, and that's, So look, I might have maybe worked with Lydia's Castle in some context if John wasn't in the band, but it definitely wouldn't have been as fast of a decision. It would have been Tanya's a really, it's not just John, because John could be in a band and it could be terrible and there would be nothing there. But right. The fact that they're a great fucking band and they have John, who has a name and clearly makes it easier to get on shows and get interest and get people interested in it, definitely I think as a new band, a developing band like that, you have to have some kind of an angle, you know what I mean? And again, with them, it's John, but they're a great band too. So it's like John's name kind of gets them in the door, but then they hear him and go, holy shit, they're a great fucking band too, you know, which I think is the key. I think as a developing band, I mean, it's really, really fucking hard. I mean, generally, even as a rule, even on EMP, I didn't work with that many developing bands because, again, it's a money pit. It's like throwing good money after bad money, and God bless, the people that do it. I mean, look, bands like Sleep Token, bands like Slaughter to Prevail. I mean, there's new bands that came out and are just fucking huge. But honestly, think about most of the new bands that are doing well, none of them are fucking new. They've been around since the 2000s, bands like Star Set or Nothing More, or, a lot of these bands that now they're, even Spirit Box, they were in another band, like all these new bands that are really big, most of them aren't fucking new. I mean, there's a few, again, like Sleep Token, who just came out 2015, but even that is 9 fucking years, Like, I would have signed a band, I'd have to dump money in them for 9 years. But if you'd tell me in 9 years, if you water this, it will grow and be Sleep Token, fucking A, I'll do it. But you don't know.
Right.
There's plenty of bands you could do shit for 9 years and then they fucking break up. You know what I mean? Like, 1 in 1 billion will be fucking Sleep Token. And the rest will still be fucking around in a van,
in their mom's basement.
Exactly. So it's just, again, when you look at those examples and that, that dynamic, it's not a very solid bet, for me. Again, Tapper, easy. Simon Says, easy. Great band, signed to Hollywood Records, put out some, and they're even a more underground band. They were huge, but there's a lot of people that fucking love them, and I didn't even realize how many until they got back together and I started working with them, and now everybody comes out of the woodwork saying, holy shit, Simon Says is like my favorite fucking band. I'm so happy they're back, which is, I think a lot of people have had time to discover them over the last 20 years too, which has been cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, I would, why don't we play a song? And we're going to do 2 things with music tonight. One of them is one of our favorite artists from last year, 2023, and going at Fish Fest, but Lydia's Castle. What do we pick? What comes around? We can play that. Is that the one you picked? Why no. You just stare at me?
I'm waiting for the rest of your thoughts to come out. No, go ahead.
It was your intro.
My intro?
Why don't you just wait a month and play the new shit when it's done?
That's okay. A great idea. Yeah, let's wait a month and play the new shit when it's done.
All right. Well, then
let's play a Glasswalker song.
Let's do Glasswalker. We don't have to actually listen to it. I'll drop it in later. I know that song inside and out, Weapon of Choice. So yeah. I'm just going to introduce it, pause, and say, oh, that was Weapon of Choice. And then I'll ask you for your...
You kind of just gave away all the tricks, man. That was, you're just supposed to do that, and that, like you're breaking the third wall here, man. Like you're supposed to just shut up and say it. Here's Glasswalker, Weapon of Choice.
Well, I was just gonna tell you, I'm not gonna play the song. I was gonna pause. I'll cut this.
I already knew that, though. We discussed this prior, but now you blew it. It was supposed to seem like we listened to the song and it was natural.
Now he's just giving me work to do in post.
No. Damn it. No, you got to leave this all in. Fuck that. We're leaving this all in.
All right.
Okay.
Words and all.
Words and all. Hey, guess what? Let's play some Glasswalker. They have a new song out called Weapon of Choice. Here's my choice. Glasswalker, Music City Metal. Glasswalker Music City Metal. They have a new single out and a little EP that
they dropped. The quickest 4.5 minutes in recorded history.
Right? That was radio play right there.
You jump time.
Wow.
So you're.
I feel like a time traveler. I feel like I'm in Back to the Future 3 right now.
We have a wormhole in the backyard.
Yeah, do you? Sure yeah, do. I just drove through one trying to get to your house. I believe it.
So for kind of someone that's calling themselves new metal, and they applied to play Fish Fest last year, but didn't make the final cut. And I was considering it, but I'd like to hear what you listened to one song.
I did. I probably would have listened more. I just didn't have time because we jumped on here. This whole thing was kind of a clusterfuck trying to get this done, but. Yeah, no, I liked it, man. You know, I'm not going to lie. Like, I can't even remember it now. I listened to it an hour ago. But it was actually good. Like, I usually listen to shit. And I mean, honestly, dude, normally, under normal circumstances, a band, if I don't like it, will probably get about 30 seconds. And I'm like, all right, I'm done with that. And I would just lie and say I wasn't. But, yeah, it was all right. Yeah. You know, I'm generally, as much as before, when you asked me, about, well, what do you think about playing a song? Would you go in to talk about it? I said, yes, I am always ready to destroy a band's hopes and dreams, but realistically, I started out as a writer and a reviewer, and I've always been pretty political, but I would normally just listen to it for 30 seconds and be like, yeah, it was cool, thanks. But no, I actually liked it. I didn't, you know, dislike it. It was interesting. It was, you know, I mean, it's got a cool vibe. I mean, it's not reinventing the wheel, you know what I mean? But it's cool. I mean, maybe a little bit of like a, I don't know, maybe a little bit of a Mudvayne vibe with a little more progressive aspects of it. And I wouldn't necessarily call it new metal. I mean, I'd call it,
right.
I mean, it's a little too progressive. But again, a lot of the new metal now is kind of, these newer artists doing it are kind of taking some more progressive kind of aspects to it, you know? But the guy was a good singer. I didn't hate it. I mean, for me, if I didn't hate it, that's about the highest compliment I'll usually give. I did not hate it. I did not hate Glasswalker.
He didn't hate it, folks.
I didn't hate it. There you go. Well, they are on the list for review for Fish Fest this year, and we'll see. We'll see when we get there. I would love to have them eventually, even do a smaller show with them because they're working hard, but.
But, yeah, they're cool. Why don't you do a battle for Fish Fest and do a couple like showcase shows and pick the best bands? See, you guys can fly me out here and get some other people, and we'll do some like pre-shows, like a battle for Fish Fest, and have a showcase thing.
Look at you slapping
all the bands
me.
Can play, and we can pick the ones from that. Like, you know, that's a good idea. Mary's hitting you like
whose
you've had this idea before.
It's a fantastic idea, Tom. However,
this was my idea.
That's been his idea for the last two shows or last 2 years worth of Fish Fest.
Yeah, we'd get
and
a buzz going.
Something
about it
always
all
somehow because it's basically been us. You know, this is going to be the first year where we actually have like an official team of people on this journey with us. To delegate to because you just there's no way we can't do it all.
Yeah. We had a couple more last year, which was good that we did some delegating with.
Oh yeah, day of, but I'm talking about
this year
ahead of time. We have talked about
a full team.
Go ahead.
What do you call the committee?
There's a committee in my head right now.
We're changing it. Thing.
There's medication for that.
Yes, thank you. That's true. There is. But no, you're on the right track. That has been his thought for the last 2 years. And like I said, just, you know, life didn't actually bring that to fruition. So having someone confirm that, Larry, I guess, means that it's meant to
be. Now you got a guy who knows what the fuck he's doing to help you do that.
Awesome.
And we appreciate that very
much.
Yes,
very much.
I guess we're saying we appreciate the things that people don't know, but we had a nice conversation the other day, and you've offered some pointers and constructive criticism.
Criticism. We're in the South.
Jesus. I mean, hey, in fairness, my constructive criticism, there wasn't a whole lot. It was just kind of, and yeah, it wasn't anything you didn't already know. I mean, again, there was more circumstantial just stuff that wasn't really anything. I'm like, I thought the show was great. I had a really good time. I loved the venue. It was set up well. It ran on time. It was very efficient. Yeah, my criticism was pretty light, actually. I mean, there really wasn't a whole lot. I really liked the event. I had a good time, and, you know.
Cool.
Thank you, man.
We appreciate it.
Yeah. And the fact, going to have to go look up the bands. We're not making any announcements yet. We're too far away from that. But
yeah.
When the time comes, there will be announcements. But, hey, if you know me, you can probably, we've probably talked extensively about all the bands we're talking about. So
yeah,
we might have. Well, any, I'm just looking at the time.
Yeah.
You guys got somewhere to be?
No.
You got somewhere to fucking be?
And you know what?
You're trying to rush me out of here? Trying to rush me out of the virtual fishbowl?
Music City Metal. We ran him right out of the electric fishbowl. That was a great hour or so spent, a little bit more than that, with Tom Hazart with us the other night, the night of the Nashville blizzard of 77.
Yes, we did the classic Irish goodbye, just okay, yeah, running out of the
bye.
Bye. No, we have a whole entire episode,
a second episode. Thank you. We had so much content. He was such a gracious guest to give us his time after he was attempting to drive to us down country roads.
Yeah. He was in the car like 5 hours, he said.
In the snow, uphill both ways.
He got home.
It was rough.
Yeah, but we did it really well spoken. Cracked me up a few times, but just a no bullshit type of guy who's been around a long time. I enjoyed it very much.
I did too, yeah.
I learned some things, but
I learned a lot. I always do. On that, why don't we close out with a tune, Fish? What do you got for us today?
I'm going to do a band called Dead Runes. They've been trickling out songs here and there.
You're so serious.
What? I'm not being just trying to introduce a band, man. I just noticed that they have a brand new song out.
Play it. What's it called?
It's called Iron Song, a single. The band's called Dead Runes. Check them out. In the meantime, hey, you want to make the world a better place? Commit a random act of kindness to a complete stranger. Here's Dead Runes with Iron Song, Music City Metal.